welcome you to this edition of Dive Deep Interview with James and Arlene Pelicane. Hello, James and Arlene.
Hi.
Hello, good to be with you guys.
Good to be with you. So James and Arlene are, where do you all live? You live in California.
We are in San Diego.
San Diego. Okay. So tell us a little bit about yourself. How long you've been married? How many kids you have? And you've written a couple of books on marriage. Tell us what those are as well, Arlene.
We are coming up on 20 years of marriage, and we have three children. Ethan is our oldest. He's 13. Noelle is 11, and Lucy is 8. And I have a few marriage books, and they are written for the woman. One is called 31 Days to a Happy Husband. So people ask me, is that for my husband to read so he will get happier? But it's actually the idea for us as women. A lot of times after we work and after we have children, we kind of forget that we have a husband, and we figure he can take care of himself. And it is that idea of dreaming about him and considering him again. So it's 31 Days to a Happy Husband. And then 31 Days to Becoming a Happy Wife is about how can I, regardless of my situation, how can I bring joy into the marriage?
Ooh, I love that. Mm. I love that. You know, you were just talking there. I think that's probably one of the biggest things that particularly as women, we do, especially when kids come along, is we kind of look at him and go, you can feed yourself, you can bathe yourself, you can take yourself to the bathroom, so you are on your own.
You're good.
It's true.
And it's so dangerous. It's so dangerous because, a marriage has to be nurtured. A relationship has to be nurtured. And so I really appreciate that you're really addressing that.
Yeah. Yeah. So in our Dive Deep interviews, we really like to just kind of dig in and pull back the curtains in our lives. And we also, part of that is that we want to help people realize that marriage isn't perfect and it takes hard work. So when was the first time that your imperfect collided with each other?
My perfect stepdaughter. You want to go? You go first. Okay.
I think it was later than sooner. We kept the honeymoon going for a long time. We did.
Really?
Really, really. I really think so. I'd like to hear what her
answer is. Until yesterday. 20 years. Good job, dear. Good answer.
I think it was after we had kids. And then it's exactly what you guys are talking about. You know, every text has a context. So like the Declaration of Independence has a context, right? The Revolutionary War. All these texts have contexts. Well, our text would be this 31 Days to a Happy Husband. And the context was that the kids now were the center of things. And I had to have the conversation with Arlene, just because I don't bleed doesn't mean I don't need. I need.
Oh.
As women, I find this to be true, excuse me for stereotyping, but many times if it bleeds, it leads, and it's they have to feel it, and they get all manipulated, if you will, by needs. And when it's louder, it gets more, the squeaky wheel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't squeak that much, but I still need.
Yeah.
That's great.
A little time out. And out of that came the book, 31 Days to a Happy Husband.
Mm. Well, I don't know about you, Arlene, but I write books out of my own personal experience. Mm-hmm. So it's usually because it's someplace God has grown me or shown me something that I needed to understand. So when James had that conversation with you, I don't believe, but I still need. Right. Tell me what your initial thought was with that. Like, how did that conversation go? I'm sure it wasn't just one conversation, but you were, you know, this was being addressed. What was your initial thoughts?
We always want to defend ourselves. So when words are said to us, I'm thinking like, but wait, I do stuff. You know, we go out to dinner, we have sex, like, I should be doing okay in this area. So there is those first moments you're in your mind defending, you're thinking, you're trying to think through, you know, is this true? And what I have found to be really helpful is just that quick prayer in the bathroom as I might be crying or something. Like, let's say I have this realization and realize, oh my goodness, I'm not this perfect wife. I thought I was doing so good in this area, and maybe I'm not doing as good in this area, or maybe I have. Because usually when we feel the ouch, it's because there is that truth in there. You know it's true inside that, okay, I am devoting too much time with the kids. I am not listening to your needs. So yeah, there's that ouch. And so I find when I can just, it doesn't take long, but just ask God, like, God, soften my heart. God, help me to hear what I'm supposed to hear and help me to change as a wife. And that has helped me a lot instead of like erecting the walls and saying, I'm a good wife. How dare you say those things about me? You know, you should see what the other ladies do. They're much less caring than I am, you know, or whatever. So instead of going down that route, just to say soft. And sometimes to kind of play that game of, okay, if I were to approach him with, yeah, honey, I need you to do this. Well, how would I want him to respond to me? I wouldn't want him to say, well, I do that all the time. You know, I'd want him to be willing and able to listen, which he does really well. So first, you know, it's the self-defense. I don't do those things. And then it's the, oh God, please soften my heart. And then you feel so sad because you're just disappointed in yourself and disappointed that you couldn't do it all right. Mm-hmm. And then the little hope comes in of, okay, so what's the next thing I need to do to build this bridge back up? What's the next thing I need to do to make my husband feel important? Because he is important. And so then you start on that more hopeful scale of, okay, here's a way we could connect. And then all of a sudden you're getting back on track.
Yeah.
Right.
Those are the stages that I went through. And I really am blessed to have a husband who will tell me things. Like, he'll get to a certain point and then we'll have a talk and he'll tell me. And I know for many women, their husbands won't tell them, and you're going to have to kind of figure that out more. I'm not really sure which is better, to be honest with you. So you're either going to have a husband who will tell you or a husband who won't say anything, and you're going to need to figure this out and draw it out of him. But either way, a lot of times these conversations need to be talked about.
Right.
Well, and I think that, you know, sometimes we can make the difference. And I say we, either spouse can make the difference in whether their spouse can address things, can give them feedback based upon, are you safe?
Yeah.
Are you emotionally safe? Like, if I'm going to give you feedback, are you going to explode at me?
Right. Will we not talk for 7 days after we have this conversation?
Right.
It's so important we create the atmosphere that's open to correction. And we instill that in our kids. We instill it in ourselves. I know for myself, whenever I have an opportunity to get feedback, someone's about to give me a lot of money. I had one time, I'm in sales. Mm-hmm. I had a client tell me, I made an offer on a house, and I didn't call him that evening. I was going to call him the next day. And I told him, I said, it's very unlikely we'll hear anything tonight. But he was a first-time home buyer. He called me up at 10 o'clock at night and just chewed me out. And
Why didn't you call me?
And I said, well, I thought I'd communicate. He was nervous, nilly. He's going, he can't even go to sleep. And I realized that I need to, number one, be very open to correction. And when those people give me that gift, I mean, this guy's made me thousands upon thousands of dollars. Now I call up everybody. Just want to check in. And they're all nervous. They're all like on pins and needles, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Create that atmosphere that when someone corrects you, of course, there's an ouch at first. But the truth of the matter is that person's going to really, it's a blessing. It might sound
yeah,
a blessing from her because she loves me. Mm-hmm. And vice versa. Like what you were saying earlier, Jill, it's safe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I think that is rare. I wish more marriages, I wish we thought of that offering of each other feedback as being a gift.
Yeah.
And, but part of it is also in the way you deliver that feedback.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Don't you think?
Well, there's two things along those lines. Absolutely. The tone is very, very important. And for us, laying down is important when we communicate. But sometimes you can have the best tone in the world. It doesn't make a difference.
There's no right way to say it.
Like, there's no right way to say, sweetheart, I need you to lose some weight right now.
There's no right way.
Right? There's no right way to say that. I'm sorry.
With a love note wrapped in celery. I mean, there's just no right way to say
that. How do you do that? Are you telling me? I don't know. So you can have a tone. I don't know. I haven't figured that one out, Jill, to be honest with you.
No. I mean, but I think some of it can come across as critical.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Or it can come across as, hey, we've got a problem and we need to solve this together.
Yeah.
Or you may not realize, you know, like when I'm thinking about James, when you had that conversation with Arlene, you may not realize that you have put the kids before our marriage. You may not realize that. And most of us don't, because, mm-hmm. You know, particularly as women, we are natural nurturers, and this little child needs me. And so, I think we easily get sucked into that. But the way in which we deliver that feedback, I do think makes a difference.
It's huge. It is huge. The tone is huge. And for us, experience laying down is a big deal.
It's hard to like yell at each other and be really mad when you're laying down side by side in the bed.
You're talking about literally laying down in the bed.
Laying down in bed and having a talk. Because you don't escalate as much. You're not yelling. You're just talking.
And having a conversation.
It actually comes off as more when you come at a correction point, like, I need help with this. This makes me sad when you do this. That's a lot easier to talk about. Like, I don't want you to be sad. Then why don't you do this? And I expect you to do this, you know, and you're all riled up. So that point of realizing my spouse is sad about this, I should try to help them in this area.
Absolutely.
Instead of, oh my goodness, my spouse is harping on me. I can't do anything right. You know, but that attitude.
Yeah. Anger is a secondary emotion. So we can communicate out of that sadness, right? Mm-hmm. First, and we think about, okay, why am I angry? Why am I angry? Well, I'm angry because you're disappointed. If you can communicate out of that, it's a lot easier for the person to receive.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not good at this.
Yeah.
He's getting a lot better.
That's funny. You know what? I mean, that's fascinating. We have been doing interviews like these for a year, and not a single person has ever mentioned lying down when you have to have hard conversations.
Yeah.
That is just fascinating, you guys. We're gonna have to give this a try.
You're gonna see us. We're like all sleeping all the time.
I'm sure it could be done, but you usually don't have an argument laying down. You usually have an argument standing. It's more of a defensive posture.
Sure.
Right. Yeah.
And even though you're mad at each other and you're kind of going at it, and if you both listen to this conversation and you go, okay, let's hit the mats, and you just like get flat. I mean, just doing that will kind of make you laugh and get, you know, it just changes the atmosphere.
Right.
So even just physically doing that, it kind of takes the spark out of everything.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, that's so fascinating.
Yeah.
This is one side of the coin of communicating. The other side of the coin is a person who doesn't communicate. That leads to very quickly to toxic behavior. I'll give you, for instance, if I go on a diet, every so often I'm losing a few pounds, I say to myself, I'm entitled. I can do the cheesecake. I can do the ice cream because I've been eating two apples a day for the last 2 weeks or whatever it is. But you get my point?
Yeah.
And what happens is that when needs go unmet in the guy's life or in the girl's life and they don't communicate it, they do other things, i.e. click, click, because they feel entitled.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Gotcha.
I can see that.
They're not communicating in an appropriate way. They're actually communicating. It becomes dysfunctional.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So when people don't communicate, that's usually a scary sign that something's deeper going on and they get that entitlement spirit and it's just, it's bad.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. Well, and I would say that's probably, so we talk about in our No More Perfect Marriages book, the 7 slow fades. And this is where things might look good on the outside of marriage, but what's going on underneath where your hearts are actually getting separated.
Yeah.
And so one of the things that we talk about is a slow fade of minimizing, which is when our spouse brings a concern to us
and we
minimize that concern.
Right.
And so I think that's probably a piece of it, probably even avoiding emotion. Those that shut down and avoid emotion, that slow fade also draws it apart.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I totally hear what you're saying.
Yeah.
So let's talk practical for a little bit here, Arlene, thinking to your 31 days to a happy husband. Can you just pick 2 or 3tips that you can give us? And then I know you haven't written a book on this, James, but I'm sure it's obvious that you have plenty of opinion, plenty of thoughts. So how about you even throw in some things that you've learned as a husband, some real practical steps that make a difference. But
you might even say I am James's ghostwriter, right? He provides
that's what I was thinking.
Material, yes. And I translate it to the human female world.
I love that.
You have happy husband. So it goes through the acronym DREAM, and I'm just going to pick out two practical things. One is the respect piece. So the R in DREAM is respect. How can we respect our husband? And of course, Love and Respect by Emerson Eggerich. That's your gold standard. So go to that if you're not familiar with it. But the idea of when your husband has this conversation, like, I would like to have sex more often, which is a very common conversation, especially if you have kids, then many times we as females will just be like, well, that's not possible, or I'm doing all that I can already, instead of realizing this is an issue of respect. Like, do you respect me enough to not minimize my need to listen to me and to do something? So my practical tip comes from Dr. David Clark, a psychologist that we both like. And he says that married people who have children who do not schedule sex do not have sex. So our very practical thing is we will literally go through the calendar at the beginning of the month, and we will send each other dates of these are the dates where we will have sex during this month. And it is on the calendar. And it's pretty much, I think, like 85% of the time we are true to those dates. And then there'll be times where it's like, okay, we're too tired, or like, this was, you know, we're okay, like, let's wait till tomorrow or whatever. But scheduling it, don't you think, has really helped? So that's really practical, because it's the kind of thing where if you just wait for like the feeling to come, or we're both not tired at night, you know, it's like, it just doesn't happen. And so to realize as a woman, like for men, it's like, woohoo, for the most part, right? It's like, it's on the corner, no big deal. And for the woman, for me, what's helped is just to realize this is good for him, this is good for me. And if I can invest time in my marriage, like, wouldn't I want to invest time in my marriage? This is a really good place to invest the time in the marriage. So one is schedule your intimacy and put it actually on the calendar. And then the second tip I would say is mutual activities. So in the word DREAM, the M is mutual activities. So find things that you like to do together. And this will be like trial and error. He's bought me rollerblades for Christmas. He's taken me skiing for Christmas. He's bought me a jujitsu outfit for Christmas. Do you see these themes? And so some of them are hits and some of them are misses, but we are trying to do mutual activities together and it's nice because he kind of doesn't care if I do them well or not. He just cares that I do them. And so for me, it's just like, go do them to have fun together. But it's really important for couples to do stuff together. Absolutely. It can be chess, it can be cards, it can be, you know, antique shopping, like whatever, but just an activity that the couple can do together, that really helps the marriage.
Let me get a little clarity to that. It's not just the couple. I believe the idea came from Gary Smalley. I heard him speak years and years ago, and if it's not Gary Smalley, I'm sorry. Basically, he studied hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of couples and from all walks of life, rich, poor, all the religions, and came to the conclusion what they had in common were common activities they did as a family. So not just us as a couple, but like we do things as a family. So for example, it could be hiking. It could be cards. It could be bowling. It's an activity. Because I don't see that much among families. They go to events. They go to dance. They go to baseball.
They watch the game.
You understand? But doing events as a family, I think, is really huge.
Yeah, that makes total sense. Well, it strengthens your identity as a family. This is who we are. This is what we do. And that's important for kids. But then it gives you those mutual activities that you also do as a couple. Because then, see, you guys are in the season of raising kids. Ours are all grown and gone.
Right.
And so I would add to this mutual activity, the reason that you also do that, I mean, fine, spend all of your years trying to figure out which one of those things it's going to be. Every Christmas, you do something different. Something, you know, it's like, ding, 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 we got it, you know. Yeah. But you need that, because then after the kids are gone, which is the season of life we're in, you need to have those things that you enjoy doing together.
Right.
And so I think that that's really, really important.
Yeah.
And I would go back also to scheduling sex. That is something that
we've been doing that.
We've
for
done
years.
That. Yeah. Now we don't have to as much now that the kids are gone. You know, we find that there's just a little bit more leeway and freedom, and we're not as exhausted.
We're alone. You're alone. Yeah. I'm not doing it.
We can try all the rooms in the house. But but that is huge. We found that to be huge. And here's another reason why that was huge. particularly for the person who has a lesser desire. And, you know, I mean, we know that in probably 80% of marriages, it's usually the husband, but there are marriages where the wife has the higher desire. Mm-hmm. But when you actually schedule intimacy, what it does is they've done research to identify that people who have a higher sex drive think about sex more often. And people have a lower sex drive, just don't think about it. So when you put sex on the calendar, it makes you think about it. And so then that person with the lesser sex drive, I mean, you know, the biggest sex organ in the body is the brain.
But at least it's on the horizon. Like, at least.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You need that because you're just not thinking about it and you don't naturally default to thinking about it. But when it's on the calendar, you see it. Mm. So I think that's huge.
Yeah.
Good. What about you, James? You got a couple of practical tips?
I do. It's not necessarily from her book. I haven't read her book in a while. We probably should reread it.
Yeah, his favorite.
we get so busy, and it's easy to get busy in life. I learned this a long time ago when I asked a girl out, and she couldn't tell me she was busy. And I didn't quite realize she was too busy for me, you understand? It took me a long time to realize. I actually saw her that evening at a party, and I was like, oh, that's funny.
This was about 25 years ago, just to let you know.
But that's hilarious.
This is when your values are clear, your decisions are easy. And in the busyness of life, when you have those really clear values, like us being connected and emotionally connected is like a really high value for us. So that value is, and that value makes our decisions easier in terms of our travel schedule, in terms of what we do with the kids, what we allow on. It's just, it's a lot easier to say no, because we realize when we're saying no to others, we're saying yes to ourselves. And again, this goes back to our values.
Mm-hmm.
It's just very, very important for us to have a clearly defined value system.
Gotcha. And how do you do that? Mm-hmm. Is that a conversation?
So, great question. So our values, I got this from Joe, what's his name?
Lou Holtz.
He has like three questions in his book, Lessons, Losses, and something else. But basically the three questions are, do you care about me?
Are you good at what you do?
Are you good at what you do? And can I trust you?
Okay.
So our values are, it's ROBS, R-O-B-S. Do what's right, do unto others, do your best, and smile. So right, others, best, smile. So those are our values. And we have those values with our kids. Anytime I reward my child, anytime I discipline them, I go through those values. I don't like what you just did. Why? What are daddy's values? What are our values as a family?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
But it also helps us as a family, Arlene and I, realize that when things are going adrift, we need to, it's easier to say no. That's the best way I can say it.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
Yeah.
That's good.
Cool.
I like that.
Yeah.
So, you know, let's turn the corner a minute and talk about your book, 31 Days to a Happy Wife. Mm-hmm. And let's not focus on the wife part as much as the, when life, maybe, you know, no matter what's going on in life, we all have the opportunity to create our own joy. Or to bring joy into our circumstances. And so talk about that for a little bit. You know, take the gender piece out of it, but more, you know, our journey as a believer, because sometimes life is hard. Sometimes marriage is hard. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we're going through difficult circumstances. And so what can we do practically to keep joy, that joy meter up towards the top?
Yeah. The word is HAPPY that I use as an acronym. So the H is hope. And I just want to touch on this briefly, that the hope is not in the marriage. It's not in the paycheck. It's not in, you know, the kid getting an award or you making it to an anniversary, but it's the H, the hope is in God. So it's that first, that joy is going to come in the presence of God. At his right hand is fullness of joy. So if you're lacking joy in your marriage, you're lacking happiness, that's your first place to go is God. I need to be more in your presence. Because the more I'm in your presence, the more I'm going to be able to have joy. So how do you do that? You know, that's praying. That's getting yourself to church. Mm-hmm. That's filling your life with worship music. That's, you know, being quiet if that's you want to be quiet, or shouting if that's you. You know, depending on your personality, how you're going to talk to God. But in his presence, that's where that fullness of joy comes. And then the idea of being positive and grateful. So wherever you're at, that, you know, there's that Elizabeth Elliot quote of you have the shirt and you have the little ink stain, but what do people look at? They look at the ink stain, even though 99% of the shirt is clean. They look, oh, you've got an ink stain right there. And it's this idea of going through life saying, wait a minute, I will literally choose not, of course, you're gonna get your shirts laundered, but you're not going to look through life's all the problems, but you're going to say, what's right in this situation? What's right in my marriage? What's right in my job? What's right in my current circumstances? Wow, I can breathe. My body works really well. It just takes a moment for you to look at someone who's in worse health than you to realize, like, I have it really good. And so it is perspective to find that joy. It is getting God's presence and then have that 99% white shirt perspective that I will literally look for what is right and I will thank God for what is right. And I think if you make that a habit, then you'll find like, well, it's much easier to smile throughout the day because I'm thinking about what is good, positive, which is just what Philippians 4 says. I'm thinking about the good, right, lovely things in my life. And a lot of times that means turning off your social media, turning off your TV, because the stuff you're looking at is not good, just and right. It's all the injustice. It's all the, you know, all the things you don't measure up to and all these things that are false. And so get that out and instead think more positively. And I think you'll find a lot more joy in your life.
I love that.
Yeah.
I love that.
Luna's practicing what she preaches. She is a very content woman. She really is. She's just very, not that she doesn't strive to be better. She's always seeking to improve herself. She's always seeking to grow. But when it comes to the curveballs in life, I mean, she's just exceptionally content. So it's a blessing.
Yeah, it is a blessing.
Especially for me. I have to sleep with her.
I bet.
This is why I'm so content. How could I not?
Oh, there you go. So I didn't prepare you guys for this question, but it has struck me as we have been talking. So Arlene, you and I were to speak at a conference, and it was probably about, 6 months ago, and you had lost your voice completely.
Yeah.
You were at the conference, but you were unable to speak. So they ended up showing a video and you were carrying around a whiteboard. And of course, all of us at that point in time, this had just happened to you. And all of us at that point in time are thinking you're going to get your voice back in a week or two, like everybody does, but you didn't. I don't remember. Was it about 2 months?
About 2 months. Yeah.
That you had no voice. This had to be difficult.
A dream for a husband, right? No voice for 2 months.
Not true.
Right. Talk about that from both of your perspectives, of what that was like. How did that challenge your marriage?
Yeah.
What did you learn during that season? Can you talk about that just a little bit?
You know what is so interesting, and this is so good for any hardship you go through, like even now that it's just a few months behind me, like I kind of feel like, oh yeah, that happened and it's over. Like you get over things. So sometimes we can ruminate about things over and over again, right? Sure. Like it was so hard. It was so awful. Can you believe I went through this? And it like lives with you forever. Mm-hmm. But I realized like, well, that just almost even as you ask this question, I'm thinking, how was that? What was that like? You know, so just accept God's grace when you go through the hard times to realize this hard time will end and you will continue and it will be just a memory soon after that. Mm-hmm. But I remember it was very frustrating because I just took my Chromebook everywhere. And if I needed to say something, I just typed it out. And I realized that most of my communication was all instruction driven, you know, like, please pick this up, or please go set the table, or so-and-so needs to get picked up. So it's all these instructions. And it was so boring because there was no time to type out my feelings or like observations.
Keep in mind, her love language is words.
Yeah. And I like words.
She loves words.
So it was like starving, you know, just like these little details. So then I realized I'm typing these instructions. I need to type like out encouragement. So then I would type out, you know, to my daughter, like, I really like how you did this for me today, you know, whatever. And so just, it was very frustrating having the limitation of not being able to say everything I wanted to say. And then it was also good, I think, to just get in someone else's shoes. Like I had a lot of anxiety to go places because I felt like when I go to church, people think they're going to talk to me. And then I have to show my little whiteboard, like, I've lost my voice. So it became this, like, I just want to hide. Like, I don't want to see anybody. And I did realize, well, I bet for a lot of people, they probably feel this way when they go into social situations. Like, I'm not comfortable. So
yeah.
Help me empathize with people who are not as comfortable speaking. Once I was mistaken at a restaurant because we had our dog with us. He's a big golden doodle and he was sitting at my feet and someone totally thought he was like an assistance dog and that I couldn't talk. So like one of them was like, came up to me. You could tell she thought I couldn't respond back and I thought it was so funny. It gave me compassion and made me think of there are people who cannot communicate and how hard that would be.
Yeah.
Right.
So that was hard.
She shares the other side. The other side of the coin is when you see your wife, you're crying because she can't do what she feels God's calling her to do and she's disappointed. I mean, it's just a downer. Mm-hmm. It's just a downer. And, you know, I've been injured numerous times for one reason or another, and you do get through these things. So, I mean, just a matter of perspective, realizing that there's a season and this season was a winter in our life. I mean, it wasn't fun, but it was what it was.
And it does. And I totally can talk, as you can hear, but I have a little bit of like lingering. I just have to drink a lot of water all the time. So sometimes your trials stay with you for a season, a longer time. And James's words were really helpful. Like, you know what? Just like any injury, sometimes it just takes time to get completely over it. And I'm sure that's true in a marriage, that there are injuries and you need the right behaviors, not only time, but the right behaviors and time.
And one added thing that needs to be said here, when you get injured sometimes, or when you get sick, right, you need time as a healer, but sometimes time isn't enough. You need antibiotics, right?
Mm-hmm.
So many times, and I say this when there's hurts and wounds in our lives, yes, time's a healer, but we also need the Holy Spirit. Mm-hmm. The Holy Spirit's going to do far beyond the scope of time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I bet you had a sense of helplessness, James, because you wanted to fix it for your wife.
Very much so. Very much so.
I mean, I'm sure there were days you didn't want to fix it. But I think that is the hardest thing when our spouse is down in some way, is wanting to be able to help them. And sometimes, you know, I mean, we went through, I had cancer 5 years ago. And, you know, I mean, I lost my hair and, you know, it was, I was sick from the chemo and all of that. And Mark has often said that the hardest part was just watching me go through that and not being able to fix it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not being able to do enough, you know, it felt like, but you're so right. You look back and go, gosh,
that was just a winter season.
Yeah.
Cause I've been 5 years cancer free and so almost 5 years. So
And then when I do want to fix it, just to realize it's just need to button it.
Yeah.
Right. Because it's not going to help. It's just not going to help.
I know.
It's so true.
Yeah.
Well, we have one question that we try to ask most of our Dive Deep interviews. And, you know, this is called No More Perfect Date Night. So our question is, when you have a date night, what's your favorite kind of date night? What's your favorite thing to do on a date night?
You want to go first? This is good. We'll see. He's taking notes for next time. So I really like going out to dinner. So because I love, you know, and I like going to new places, like someplace I've never been. And then I just love that getting to order and not doing dishes and all this. So I do like that traditional going out to dinner. But one of my favorite dates was when we went and there's like a foot massage place that you can go to, and it's kind of in the Chinese part of San Diego. So there's lots of these massage places all along, lots of shops of them. So to go in there to Happy Feet with my husband and us sit like next to each other while people like, you know, massage our feet and they like hit you at the end and you're like, that's right, with them next to me and you're just slapping all this stuff. I mean, it was so funny. So I like that.
That's funny. Yeah. I love that. You know, one time we went and got a pedicures together.
Yeah. That was a stretch.
He actually had a friend of his that said that he and his wife did it like at least once a month. And I was like, really? I've never. And they told us where they go. And there were other couples in there.
Yeah.
So it was like not abnormal.
That is so funny.
Yeah.
The only way I'm getting a pedicure is if I lose a bet. I'm sorry, Mark.
it was great. I mean, you're getting the foot massage and all this, like, and then they, I think the craziest thing was your pores are all opened up from getting cleaned, and you walk around, it's like, wow, my feet are like tingling. Is that okay? They did offer to paint my nails. Oh, and God. I said, no, I'm good.
That's right.
Yeah.
So, James, what about you? Favorite date night?
Well, I like variety. I think all guys like variety, but I like variety. So one of the things I would like would be the activities we did when we were dating. Like making out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is a great go-to.
Like, let's make out in the car.
That's fantastic. Why is it only that the teenagers, the adulterers, the fornicators can make out? Why can't us married people make out?
Yeah.
I love it. I think you're going to have to make that dream come true, Arlene. Oh, that's great. Well, you guys, this has been a great conversation. Yeah. Thank you.
We love talking to you guys.
This was fun. You. So this is Mark and Jill Savage, and we're signing off with a reminder that a real marriage isn't perfect. A real marriage is two people being perfected. Mm. Thanks for joining us.